Take a ride through Northern Virginia these days, and you might notice a very specific kind of building.
They're these giant kind of warehouse buildings. They're windowless, they're modern. They're sort of the size of the height of small office buildings, but they're popping up everywhere.
Evan Halper reports on the energy transition for the Washington Post. He says, from the outside, these buildings might look like your average warehouse. But inside, it's more dystopian.
It probably looks like something you've seen in a sci-fi movie. I mean, there's just lots and lots of computer servers. And, it's just shelf after shelf of computer equipment, not a lot of people in there, not a lot of employees.
He's talking about data centers, huge warehouses full of computers that process everything that happens online, every photo on your iCloud, every app on your phone, and increasingly, all the new AI models being developed. As Evan recently reported in the Post, all these data centers are gobbling up a lot of electricity, like a lot. And as those new AI models get more complex, they need even more power. The problem? There isn't enough electricity to go around.
They're running out of power in Northern Virginia to supply all the needs of these data centers. They ran out in Silicon Valley a long time ago. And so what's happening is the companies are just moving to places where there's power, places we never sort of expected there to be data centers. They're popping up all over Georgia, particularly in the Atlanta region. They're popping up in Altoona, Iowa. They're going to Omaha now because there was a big power interconnect, Columbus, Ohio. So they're just sort of spreading all over the country, not just to tech hubs, but to communities that were not known for the tech industry, but had available power.
No one really saw this coming. Power companies' projections for electric use didn't account for the AI boom or for the surge in U.S. manufacturing. Factories are getting built at a pace not seen in decades, courtesy of the Biden administration's signature infrastructure bill. Oh, and there's more. Demand for electric vehicles and other climate-friendly stuff is going up. All this means we need more electricity.
It's a concerning problem, and something is going to have to give sometime soon. We already knew that the power grid was in trouble, that it wasn't being updated fast enough, the infrastructure wasn't getting built fast enough. But then this sort of came out of nowhere. And so what's happening is there's just not going to be enough coming online fast enough to do all the things that we want to do. The challenge is that the power grid is just not ready to move this much power this fast.
So today on the show, the country is thirsty for more electricity. Can the grid keep up? I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. Just dig into electricity demand some more because, electricity demand in the US was steadily increasing from like 1989 to I think around 2007. And then from 2007 on, electricity demand in the US was, relatively flat. Why was that?
A lot of it has to do with efficiency. The level at which we've been able to make appliances and the things we use have become a lot more efficient. And so even as population grows, the amount of energy it takes to run an air conditioner or run a heating system or run a dishwasher just keeps going down and down as products become more efficient. And so that was a big part of it. And then there was also the issue of globalization. And a lot of manufacturing that used to happen in this country stopped happening in this country for a while. And you can't discount how much energy the industry requires, to run a cement plant or to make electric batteries or to do any of these big, heavy industry things. It just takes an immense amount of electricity. And so as we offshored a lot of that stuff to other countries, we weren't needing as much energy as we had during periods when there were manufacturing booms in the US.
So now electricity demand is it's booming. And there's a few reasons for that. There are the data centers, of course. Why are we seeing so many data centers? Does it have anything to do with like pandemic driven demand from remote work and streaming and cloud?
It's a lot of factors. I think people do assume a lot of this is just so there can be more pet videos and people can use TikTok and stream Netflix. And that is all related. I mean, these things do take data, but we've been doing those things for a while and doing quite a lot of it, you know, before the pandemic and into the pandemic. But this demand that we wrote about recently, this real surge, it really only has only shown itself in the last, you know, 6 to 9 months. And a lot of that is driven, when it comes to data centers, by artificial intelligence. That industry is just developing so much more rapidly than even the tech companies expected it to, and this kind of arms race to as quickly develop artificial intelligence as possible. I mean, it has all kinds of implications. There's also concern that if we don't build these data centers and take control of this industry, you know, a rival can. Russia can, or China can. China has lots of hydropower, and that's a concern too. So no one's really working too hard to slow down the development of this, but it just takes an immense amount of power as the artificial intelligence functions become more sophisticated.
So if we can just like get nerdy a little bit, or like dig into that, I mean, why do these centers use so much electricity? What is the electricity doing and powering?
So when you want to do these kind of artificial intelligence supercomputing exercises, and you want artificial intelligence to sort of perform at the level of, you know, that goes beyond genius. So they say artificial intelligence is already kind of performing at like an IQ level equivalent to like, you know, Albert Einstein. And it takes just a ton of computing power to make a computer that smart and do all those things that smart, just the data and the speed that's needed. And it takes an immense amount of power to bring all that data in. And, you know, I mean, I'm not a tech reporter or computer scientist by any means, but the way it's been explained to me is that as these applications become ever more sophisticated, they just require more and more horsepower, computing horsepower.
Okay. And so besides AI, the second big reason for the increase in demand for power is manufacturing. And this is a lot of it's coming from the Biden administration and the Inflation Reduction Act and some other legislation. And I know at Axios, I've covered sort of the boom in building factories right now, all these factories coming online to do all this different kind of stuff. I guess what I'm asking is, you know, what is the scale now of manufacturing that we're seeing in the U.S.? How is that impacting the power grid? And what kind of products are these factories producing?
So the boom in manufacturing is having a big impact on the outlook for the grid. Since the Inflation Reduction Act was passed, the Biden administration says 200 factories have been announced, 200 new factories. And these factories, you know, we haven't had a building boom of factories like this in decades. And so that boom was driven in large part by these subsidies and the Inflation Reduction Act. We wanted to bring all these products that were being made in China and other places abroad back to the US, in part to spur the economy and give the US some more control over these supply chains, but also, you know, for national security reasons. As we're going through this energy transition and we're more and more relying on solar panels, on batteries for our cars, on heat pumps, on all these things that involve electrification and green energy, the worry is that if we don't control these supply chains and we don't make these things here, we may not be able to get these products later, or we may not be able to have control over the prices. And so you're just seeing this boom in factories making everything from like industrial batteries that help store solar energy for power plants, to car batteries, to solar panels, to, you know, components for wind farms. And these are all things, I mean, if you're going to make solar panels, you know, it takes multiple plants. It's not just, you know, one plant, but like everything else we're talking about, it takes a lot of energy to make this stuff. And, you know, that's where the tension is.
And so it's not just the factories and the plants demanding so much power. It's people like me in our homes trying to be environmentally conscious, switching to more electric products, right? Like electric stoves, cars, heating systems. Is that having an impact also on the surging demand?
It's having an impact, but it had been baked in. It mm-hmm. was assumed we were all going to be transitioning over to electric vehicles sometime in, you know, the 2030s or early 2040s. The plan was to make the power grid carbon neutral in sometime in the 2030s also. So these were all sort of planned and expected, and it was looking like it was going to be a big challenge to get the power grid ready for all these things, but it seemed not an insurmountable challenge. As soon as all of this need from the tech industry, coupled with all of this manufacturing that just a few years ago we didn't expect mm-hmm. to come back here happening at the same time, what it means is that the power we thought was going to be there for all of us to make this transition seamlessly is going to be kind of harder to come by. And it could mean that if you get an electric vehicle, for example, it's great, you're driving an electric vehicle at zero emissions, but it may take much longer than we'd anticipated for that electric vehicle to actually be powered by solar power from your utility. And the utility, because they're short on power, may be seeking permits from regulators to open more gas plants, and in a lot of cases, even coal plants. And so you may be running the electric vehicle, which is great, but the power that's juicing it is coal or gas instead of solar.
When we come back, could the demand for electricity slow down the transition to clean energy? I mean, there's all this increased demand for power because we're trying to shift to clean energy. At the same time, the increase in demand means that energy companies can't keep up in a clean way, and they want to keep the old fossil fuel power plants, you know, that are running on coal and natural gas open. It's hard to sort of square the circle there, right? Is the surge in demand throwing a wrench in the conversion to clean energy?
The surge in demand is definitely complicating the energy transition. The plan to bring in all this wind and solar power, these plans are still moving forward, but we're seeing, because there's so much demand and it's going up so fast, that even with all the wind and solar and geothermal power that's planned to come on the grid, it's just not going to be enough. And the demand is just outpacing it. And utilities are saying, you know, that we just can't bring enough of this renewable energy on as quickly as is going to be needed. So we need to delay retirements of some of these coal plants. We need to delay retirements of gas plants. We need to build some of these gas plants because they're easier to interconnect with the grid the way the infrastructure works now. Mind you that this is not without controversy. You know, delaying the retirement of a coal plant can be more lucrative for them. And so there is suspicion that are the utilities using this moment to just say, you know, we need to keep all this fossil fuel generation online, when there's questions about how true that really is. And so this is playing out in a lot of states. There are just fights going on about the extent to which utilities should be allowed to keep on this fossil generation and the extent to which they should be nudged to work harder to bring more renewable energy on quicker, even as this surge in demand for electricity plays out.
But not to hammer this too much, but I mean, if the demand to produce renewable energy supplies like electric vehicles or solar panels is basically creating a demand for non-renewable energy sources like coal and natural gas, I mean, this is a problem. This is sort of, I'm straining to find a metaphor, but it's like, this seems quite counterproductive. If we want to speed up the transition to renewables, but we can't do it without the dirty energy supplies, that's a big problem. And how is it being addressed?
It's a really complicated puzzle. And what you're seeing happen is companies that maybe they're making clean tech, they're making the batteries and the solar panels and the electric vehicles, and even the tech companies that are, you know, building these big data centers, they'll say, we're running on zero emissions power. You know, we understand that we're part of the energy transition and we're making sure that all the power that we're using is zero emissions. And that sounds great, of course, but there's a finite supply of zero emissions power available. So even if Microsoft claims it for this data center, if a data center is taking up the equivalent of energy that it takes to power 80,000 homes, and then those 80,000 homes can't get access to renewable energy because Microsoft claimed it and there's just not that much on their local grid or not enough for everyone, they wind up using the gas plant. So when you step back and look at the big picture, the fact is there's just a, you know, there's a limited supply. There's a big supply, but it's limited of renewable energy out there. So, you know, it is a legitimate problem.
Why can't the power grid keep up with this growth? I think we did an episode maybe last year, months back, just about how it's, you know, infrastructure is aging and it's hard to get these plants to do more. Is that why the power grid can't keep up with this? Why we don't have enough energy to meet the demand?
Yeah. Well, what's happening is we're just not building transmission lines and transfer stations at the pace we were before. Some of it is related to supply chains and challenges getting the needed supplies, but a lot of it is really just about the permitting. So federal regulators don't have much authority to just say, we're putting power line here and it's got to go through these three states and we're going to use eminent domain and that's going to be that. It goes down to the states. And the power grid is, it's really interconnected regional grids. And so one state may have lots of resources for like a lot of wind or a lot of sun, where it's a good place to build a solar farm or wind farm. But they need to get that energy to another state where the population centers are, or the data centers are. And then the states wind up getting into these big fights about, okay, who's going to pay for this transmission? How's it going to work out? Is the company going to pay? Why are these lines going through, this rancher's property? He doesn't want these things there. And so there's just all of these fights.
Evan says another big issue is the environmental review system. Right now, landowners can file lawsuits that take decades to resolve, which then drags out the process of building new infrastructure even more.
And so what you're hearing right now on Capitol Hill is this big debate about permitting reform. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, so can you change the environmental review process so the lawsuits can't drag on for 14 years? And it all sounds great. And every lawmaker you talk to will say, we're all for permitting reform. When it gets down to it, you know, this means changing the rules and giving, you know, landowners and voters less recourse and less say in where these power lines go. And that's politically fraught. So yes, the infrastructure is aging. And the reason it's aging is because there's just so many fights over any proposal to build these new power lines. They're really hard to get built.
It's just like another real estate horrible story in the United States, because everything is so local and all these little fights happen at the state level and the local level. Like in an ideal world, you'd have the federal government coming in and sort of planning this stuff out better, right? Especially considering all the money at stake at the federal level.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they do it in some other countries. Obviously you can go too far in the other direction. I mean, one of the concerns is that in China, they don't worry about what local residents have to say about where a power plant is going or where a transmission line is going, and they can just build whatever they want, where they want. But that brings all kinds of other issues. But that is a concern when it comes to this like arms race with AI. Is like China has so much energy and they can just build power plants whenever they feel like it, where they feel like it. And the concern is, well, they have all this power to do whatever they want and leapfrog the U.S. tech companies in artificial intelligence development.
Are local authorities able to prioritize certain projects? I mean, I know one thing we didn't talk about that's taking up some power demand right now is crypto mining. You'd think that if, you know, local authorities could prioritize, they would maybe start with the data centers that are powering AI and streaming, or the factories, and sort of move crypto down the line. Are they able to do that?
That's a really interesting question, and one that every time I asked, people were just really grappling with, and there was a lot of hand-wringing over it. I mean, the answer right now is they can't. And in a lot of places, not only can the authorities not decide, okay, we want to prioritize this project because it's better for the economy and better for the community, over this project when it comes to giving power hookups to the grid. There are even laws in some places specifically prohibiting utilities from prioritizing anything over anything, and they're to protect an industry like crypto mining.
One question I have is, I mean, who's going to pay for all this, for the updates in the power grid needed to keep up with demand? You know, if we do succeed in ramping up power production, is that something that you'll have to pay for in your electric bill? Or is if we do ramp up, does that mean my electric bill maybe goes down because there's more power?
Yeah, that is a really interesting question, because I was talking to a utility executive in Texas recently and was asking about all of this demand and who's going to pay for it and who's going to pay for the infrastructure, because the companies that are using the factories and the data centers that are causing this surge in demand are saying, we're going to pay for all the infrastructure we use. And anytime a utility needs to bring a whole bunch of new power down because of us, we'll make sure we're footing the bill. And he said, you know, that's kind of the public line, but you can't satisfy all of this demand that's coming right now without everyone's rates going up. And he said, just the price per unit of power, everyone should expect it to go up. And it's not just, the burden's not just going to be shouldered by these companies that are using massive amounts of it, because, you know, when all of this need for power happens and all this infrastructure needs to be built, it's not just a few companies that pay for it. Everyone winds up paying for it.
So I'm looking at the charts in your story, which have these projections of demand. And it's like, we probably don't have enough supply of energy. Like on a practical level, what does it mean? Like, does this mean that, you know, AI won't advance as quickly as it needs to? Does it mean that there's going to be like rolling blackouts? Like how worried should people be that the US doesn't have enough, you know, electric power to meet the demand or the demands we see coming online in the future?
What we're seeing right now is it means that companies that want to build something, whether it be a factory or a data center, they're having to wait longer than expected to be able to get the power they need. Unless there are some changes quickly and some infrastructure gets built quickly, the wait times for getting that power are going to expand, and it's going to take longer and longer. Some of them are starting to look at, like, can we build a small nuclear plant on our property? Can we build our own microgrid with a solar farm? There's going to be some challenging decisions that will have to be made. Will it mean that companies that need a lot of power are just going to be told that they can't get it on the timeline they need? And does it chase them, you know, away to other countries? Does it mean that the transition toward cleaner energy for the rest of us who want to use electric vehicles and heat pumps in our homes, that those things are going to be run on coal and gas power long past the point we expected them to? Or does it mean more rolling blackouts? You know, I mean, we're already at a point in this country where we're seeing, when it gets really hot in the summer with extreme weather or really cold in the winter, you know, these kind of rolling outages that we're just not accustomed to. I mean, maybe in California, it was something people were familiar with, but now we're seeing them in Texas, we're seeing them in the Midwest. You know, the grid is already so precarious. So this does layer on a bunch of other potential problems unless this is addressed very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, anytime the solution to a problem is build small nuclear plant, I'm thinking the problem is very, very big.
Yeah, I think that's an astute point.
My last question for you that I've been thinking about is, I mean, for hundreds of years now, we've used more and more energy and power, and that's fueled immense economic growth in the United States and, you know, in most developed countries. Are we reaching the limits of that now?
Well, we're still using more and more. I think that's the thing. We're figuring out how to use it smarter and smarter, but we're just using so much that we need to start prioritizing, which, you know, everyone is loath to do because we've never had to do that before. We've never had to say, okay, it really does make more sense to get this battery plant in our community, and this is going to employ a lot of people, and, you know, they need the energy. A crypto mining facility, okay, maybe they'll bring in some tax revenue, but that doesn't really make as much sense for a community. Having to make these decisions is just something we're not accustomed to. So whether we go in a route where we make those, start making those decisions, we'll see. But a lot of people I'm talking to who are sort of running the grid and are experts in this are having a hard time seeing how we get there, but also having a hard time seeing how we keep the electricity system afloat without going there.
Evan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Evan Halper is a business reporter at the Washington Post covering the energy transition. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Anna Phillips, and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Paige Osborne. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back next week with another episode. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me over on Slate Money every Saturday. Thanks for listening.